The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from on location in Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Cam Knapsack for another edition of the main show here on the Knapsack Files podcast feed. That means it's time for an in-depth, insightful, an inspiring interview. And actually, I found a man who checks a lot of those boxes. It's been a long time coming, getting him on this show. It was always in the works, but I think now is the right time, and that is Mr. John Rocha.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. I'm looking forward to this.
Thanks, man. I mean, you've been on a lot of other shows that our paths have crossed so much. I mean, we work together, but it's like, you know, we're in the same circle. And I remember when you showed up, it was like, who's this sultry-voiced man from, you know, college, Christian's College? Days. How long have you been out in LA now?
17 years now, I guess. 2000 came out in, well, I guess what? What are we in? 2000. So about 16 years, because I came out in October of 2000. To come to LA.
Gotcha.
So I've been here. Never moved away.
It's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I'm 19 years now.
Wow.
And it seems like yesterday, number one.
Yeah.
Which shows that we're old. what specifically brought you up?
Well, initially it was to be an actor, you know. Mm-hmm. I had struggled, but I graduated from Florida State, you know, went with Christian, like you just mentioned, and there was this decision, like, do I go to LA or do I go to New York? And so for me, it was LA because a lot of my friends were going to LA, and I felt like I wanted to, you know, I love film, I love television, and so I was like, well, this is where it's at, you know. And even though I was a stage actor and I love stage acting more than anything else, I was like, well, the money's here, being famous is here, possibly getting on a show is here. So I came out with those ideas.
Why do you like stage acting better? What's it about that?
I just think my personality is better suited for it, because you may not have noticed this, but I'm a large personality, and I've got a lot of
emotions running through you.
That's right.
Fiery.
I'm a fiery Latino. There's nothing wrong with it. And so for me, I felt like that was more my my calling. And then I've had that proven right, you know, because I haven't booked a series regular or anything like that on any of these shows. Commercials are really hard for me because I'm just a big personality. People go, just be yourself. And I'm like, this is me. This is me. You don't understand. This is me. So, you know.
Do you think that, I mean, there's theater out here, but it's not like it is in New York.
No. There are more stage productions in LA than there are in New York, but that means there's more opportunity for people to not do as good work in LA in theater. And most theater is about how can I get on a TV show by showcasing my talents.
Right.
As in New York, it's like, how can I really serve the work?
And then that's like a career out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that it isn't here.
Right, exactly. You're laying the groundwork to get onto another stage, a bigger stage, make more money doing that and get known, you know. But when it's here in LA, it's like you want to, like we saw in La La Land, that movie, you know, she's trying to do that one-woman show so she can get on a TV show, you know. It's not about anything
pure. Is there ever going to be a Rocha one-man show?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I think you could do it.
A Rocha one-man show about my dating experiences in LA.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that I have thought about extensively over the last few years.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, there are some crazy stories, son.
You're an epic dater, and I say that with awe,
yes,
admiration, respect.
It's true.
I mean, you and I go back and forth offline a lot.
Yeah,
I never date, and you pick up my slack.
Well, yeah, I date a lot. Yeah, and I try to, and then I go through periods where I don't, like where I'm like done with it, where I'm retired, like Brett Favre. Yeah.
Now, I'll dive right into this side.
Sure.
We went that direction there. You're a couple years older than me, a few years older than me. We're in the same generation.
Yeah.
I count it the same. Have you ever been married or engaged?
No, never married or engaged. Got close twice. In fact, recently, a couple of years ago, or a few years ago, was... I thought for sure it was going to happen, and it didn't really pan out in the end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, I've come close a couple of times, but I, you know, I've been a nomadic soul. I'm a seeker.
Sure.
I'm a seeker. I wish I was more of a like guy who had a stabilization and was like, okay, this is who I am. But I'm constantly evolving all the time, and I'm constantly seeking like better versions of myself all the time. And so I'm never satisfied. So that means I grow out of situations or people aren't like, people can't feel stability with me because I'm constantly searching for changes.
You need someone to grow with you.
Yes, absolutely. And not a lot
Which
of people.
Which is hard.
It is hard. It is hard. And respect for, and no way am I judging anybody I've dated or been with or had relationships works with, it can be really hard. You know, my path is not the common path. So, at times I've found these amazing women. I've dated some amazingly intelligent, beautiful, sexy, incredibly attractive women, in my opinion, but I've never found the one that I was 100% like, yes, I feel comfortable with doing this.
Do you feel as time moves on, all jokes aside, do you feel like, all right, this is the way it's going to be? Do you still have hope for a brand new day? We're going to find that one?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do still have hope. Yeah. I mean, as you get older, like, I'm in this period now where I'm like, well, is it going to happen? And if it doesn't, am I okay being the lifelong bachelor or whatever? And because I don't want to be that creepy guy at the end of the bar trying to hit on the woman who's 30 years younger than him. I don't want to be that guy. But, you know, for me, it's like I also kind of put things in God's hands. So I'm just like, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it's supposed to happen, great. Yeah. You have to believe the path is the way it is for a reason. So it's like, okay, it just hasn't shown itself to me.
Including the mistakes.
Yes, including the mistakes. Absolutely. I mean, looking back, the woman I've dated 10 years ago, I would never date now because my tastes have changed. Well, I've evolved in different things, you know?
What are some of those tastes that have changed?
Well, like you said, this idea of understanding growth. And when 10 years ago, I was I just had a lot of like real stuff I had to process and figure out. And I was very like suspicious of everyone. And I was very questioning of everyone. So I had a lot of self-esteem, self-worth stuff that I had to explore in therapy. Sure. So like if the women I dated back then abused me all the time, like emotionally.
Yeah,
I dated unavailable women. Like I would date.
That's the best.
Yeah, right, isn't it? Because that's your reflection of your self-esteem. You're like, I'm so unlovable, I need to date women who make me feel unlovable, you know, or don't make me feel like they want to spend time with me. Then I would get frustrated and would cause fights. And that was the issues all the time with the women that I dated. And I'm not gonna lie, I dated some married women, and that's been a thing too way back then. So now I would never do that.
Sure.
Yeah, because I'm in a whole different place.
Yeah.
You know, and I've evolved, I think, since the death of my father in 2008. Like, I've been on this kind of evolution ever since into a different person.
Did that set it off?
Yeah, really did. It really, like, I was in the middle of therapy when my father got diagnosed with cancer. Mm. Like, a friend of mine had kind of sat me down in 2005, I think, and at a CPK at Hollywood and Highland, and she said, listen, you're getting into these fights with your friends, and you're like, everyone loves you, but you don't seem to love yourself. And that's like, we can't keep carrying this with you. And so that was a really powerful thing. It's my friend who, I don't want to say her name, but she's like essentially my sister in life. And so I took her advice and I explored this place called the Maple Center in Beverly Hills. And I started going to therapy with these counselor every Wednesday, you know? And so, about a year and a half into the therapy, just as we were getting close to, what the reasons were, which was some of the situations with my father, he got diagnosed with cancer. Mm. And so I had to struggle with blaming my father in therapy and then forgiving my father, which is the process of therapy.
Yeah.
It is forgiveness, acceptance, and moving on. I had to grapple with the fact that this man who I love was growing to love again was dying of cancer. Mm. And so it was a colossal mind. Can we cuss on this?
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
It was a colossal mind fuck for me at the time. Yeah. Sometimes you got to go through the darkness of the soul or whatever. And
I call it the long dark tea time of the soul.
Yeah.
Douglas Adams.
That's great. Long dark tea time. And then come out the other side and you're a different person. You know?
Yeah. And talk about that moment that deciding to go seek help of any kind.
Yeah.
I did that. I think a lot of people do that. And I think one of the traits you and I share is we're sometimes open, maybe to our own detriment of what we're feeling or what we're struggling with or everything. But I think it helps other people too. But take me to that moment where a close person to you is saying, hey, make some changes. We all hear that.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you're like, I'll do that tomorrow.
Right.
What made you switch?
I think because the sincerity in her voice, what I thought, the truth in her eyes, and also because I had felt I had hit some kind of wall where I was like, I can't figure this out on my own. You know, I'm an intelligent guy. I'm an analytical guy. Part of what I enjoy doing with you guys, you know, analyzing film or whatever, like, is what I love to do. I apply that to my life, and I could not find my way out of these battles I was having with my friends, these feelings of incredible loss of self-worth and self-esteem. And so when she said it in such a way that was so truthful that I could not deny the fact of it. And so I reached out, and I love her to death, and she's still one of my great friends. And so I reached out to a friend of mine that night who I knew was going to this place, and I said, hey, What is the process? And right. then that Monday morning, I called and set up an appointment. And sometimes when the thing is, Ken, with my life is mm-hmm. when something feels truthful and I know and I know, yeah. I do it. When I know gotcha. When I know, I do it.
Yeah. yeah.
And so I knew in that moment when we had the launch that it was time.
It was time.
Yeah.
And had you, over the past years, had you locked in on something, got close to changing, backed off, got scared, or just didn't acknowledge it?
Yeah, I did. Well, I had come out of the military, you know, where you're you kind of bred to be a certain way. Do you know yeah. what I'm saying? And then transition that into an artistic world, going into the acting and stuff. I was ashamed of my emotions. That was the genesis of my thing, was that I was a sensitive child, but my father was a macho old school Latino. So sure. he tried to create something inside me that wasn't naturally who I was. And so my battles, my wars with myself since I was a formative age, was always being ashamed of the sensitive side of myself as opposed right. to embracing the sensitive side of myself. Because yeah. my father, in trying to toughen me up, had erroneously tried to make me destroy that part of myself.
Right.
And I see that now in retrospect, that that's not the way to be. You know, you have yeah. to, hopefully we are changing as a gender in this society, in this world,
yeah.
to be more open about our feelings, about our emotions. And regardless of what the current presidential administration sure. thinks, I think it's really important that we as men keep progressing and evolving to that point where we find our mm-hmm. Strength in emotion and our strength in being men. Like, there's nothing yeah. wrong with having both sides.
Absolutely. You know? And I also, that phrase, yeah, come on, be a man, yeah. has some, I don't want to say, I guess, positive connotations of handling your stuff and being who you're.
Sure.
But it really aims to ignore this other side
right.
where you're struggling or you know, just a couple of, you know, I should be able to see you and give you a hug.
Yeah.
Not for, you know, and not feel weird about that emotional exactly. of support. You know,
right. Look at other countries like Italy and Spain and whatever. Like they kiss on the cheek. Two kisses, one on the cheek.
Sure.
It's Greek. It's not. It's
Is that
issue.
What that was before you yeah. got on the air? Okay.
I'm trying something
Making
new.
Sure. It seemed weird at the time, but now it makes sense to me.
I just kind of went with it.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. It's different. Yeah, I used to have conversations with our friend Alicia Malone.
And, oh, yeah.
And she says, you know, hey, you know, and this is where it is. As this kind of new modern battle of the sexes, so to speak, and mm-hmm. that's my phrase, not hers. You know, she feels sorry for a lot of men who aren't allowed because they're trained from very young.
Yeah,
not allowed to have these kind of emotions. Mm-hmm. And part of it, and I'm sure part of your therapy is acknowledging or discovering and learning and accepting that your father was a human being.
Yeah.
Who had a certain way mm-hmm. in his mind and did what he thought was right.
Absolutely. I mean, the greatest gift is forgiveness, right? And mm-hmm. understanding and forgiveness. And
yeah.
And that was it. At the end of the day, once you get through the blame, you find this place of like, okay, what were his limitations as a human being? What mm-hmm. were his situations? You know, my father came from a broken home, an alcoholic stepfather who mm-hmm. forced him from the house. He didn't see his family for 16 years when he ran away to Argentina from Bolivia. So there was a lot of anger and sadness in my mm-hmm. father from a terrible upbringing. Yeah. And so he didn't have the emotional capacity to understand how to raise a sensitive kid. Mm-hmm. And so I don't blame my dad or my mom. It's more a matter of like, okay, I understand these parameters. And I was able to have these conversations with him before he passed from cancer. Like,
really?
Oh, yeah, it was really great. The last, because I finished my therapy before he passed. Mm-hmm. I was ready. When I hit my 3 years of therapy, for whatever reason, it felt organically it was time to stop.
Sure.
And then my father and I were having these conversations before he passed consistently. And to my father's credit, because mm-hmm. of the cancer and diabetes, he had let go of a lot of the macho stuff.
Sure.
And he was embracing more of the mortality, the vulnerability. So we were able to be more open with each other emotionally, which is a gift, just such
sure.
a gift. And so we were able to progress, and he was able to ask for forgiveness. I was able to ask for forgiveness. And he let me cry in front of him.
Oh, wow.
Like a week before he died, I had this incredible like floodgate mm-hmm. of tears, kind of like Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan, where
sure.
after Robesi dies, he has that moment where he's like cough crying.
Yeah.
I had that with my dad right in front of my dad, my mom. My dad, for the first time ever, didn't say, stop crying or don't cry. It's okay. He just let me let it out.
Sure.
And we had this conversation and he said to me, I just want you to know, I'm sorry for anything I ever did to hurt you.
Right.
I always loved you. I always supported you. I just didn't know how.
Yeah.
You were smarter than me at 10 years old, and I couldn't handle that. Mm. And it was like amazing to have that, like to have that conversation with him.
Right.
And so we got to say our goodbyes to each other in a very loving way and bring our relationship full circle before he passed. It was just a gift, man.
That tugs on the heartstrings there. That's to have that opportunity is all we could hope for. But also, again, you talk about the therapy, and I think that's one of the real, you know, if you go in angry or confused, you got to come out understanding and accepting.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very key. Yeah. Did you go to the military for any specific reason?
I was 2 years into college, and I was really unhappy at college, and because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I'd always wanted to be an actor, but once again, we go back to this pressure of my dad, like, you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor, you have to, like, because you're first generation
the
American.
The old school type of like.
Yeah, exactly. All these things. Like, you got to represent the family, you know, and there was too much pressure for me. I wasn't built to handle that, you know, and I started to put on weight, and I started to go through periods. It's the first time I discovered that I was a person who has depression within his psychological makeup, right? So I was in a very depressed state. I didn't understand what it was at the time, right? I just was incredibly sad. Mm-hmm. And so I had this moment where I'd put on like 20 pounds, and I was just incredibly, you know, just sad, managing a video store to help pay for college. The college I was studying, international politics, which I didn't really like. And I had this recruiter who had come in all the time, was just a person, part of the, he said, like, he just came in and was renting something. And I remember, and I said to him, how quickly can I be on a bus to basic training if I come to the next morning and sign up? He goes, if you're serious, I can have you on a bus in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And so I spent that night thinking about it. I was 19 years old. I didn't have to have my parents' permission.
Right.
And I was still living with my parents and commuting to school. And so that morning I had a friend of mine, I think his name is Rob. I don't remember where he is now, but he drove me to the recruiters, and I did the ASVAB. I got a 92 in the ASVAB.
Oh, wow.
And then I signed up, and I signed up with the Army. And in retrospect, I should have done the Air Force. More opportunities, smarter situation.
More beach volleyball.
More beach volleyball, all that. But like, I signed up for the Army because I felt that I needed discipline in my life, and I was lost. And I thought this would be a great way to challenge myself one way or the other. So,
and what years were that? I'm trying to put
1990 is when I signed up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, 1990.
Okay.
So right before the first Gulf War.
Yeah. What happened there? Where were you?
Yeah, well, I didn't get stationed anywhere. Okay. And I signed up for the reserve. So I was there. Like, I did basic training and I did AIT, but I signed a reserves contract because I wanted to keep going to college.
Sure.
So I didn't go full time.
Gotcha.
So I was there. But the first 6 months, the Gulf War broke out while I was in basic training.
Yeah.
And so that was shocking because...
Yeah, what's going through your head when this is real? This isn't Star Wars. This is, you know what I mean? This is, isn't Battlefield Bad Company on PS3.
It's, right.
It's potentially real.
This ain't Metal Gear, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that, like, when I make a decision to do something, and I feel like in my entire life I've made these strong decisions when I needed to make them, right? And so military for me was this strong decision. So when I committed to it, I committed to it. So I remember distinctly when the Gulf War broke, because the big thing my mother was afraid of, she was like, my dad was super pissed that I signed up. Mm. My mom was in tears.
Not the Army recruiting commercials you see.
No, none of that stuff that you see on television. Ridiculous. But like when the Gulf War broke out, I remember distinctly two things happened.
Right.
We were allowed to call our people, like, because a lot of people from basic training were going right into the Gulf War.
Sure.
And their units were going right in. And I don't know if people remember, but the first news reports were 20,000 to 30,000 were going to die.
Yes.
The first wave. People don't remember that too much. And so I remember that I found this moment on a Sunday in the barracks, and I just walked out and sat down on the stoop for like an hour. Mm. And I remember just staring at the sidewalk, just going like, I didn't sign up for this.
Right.
But this is, I did sign up the contract, and I'm not going to be a dishonorable discharge because that follows you for the rest of your life, and I'm not going to quit. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and it's in God's hands, you know. And at the time, I was a very, very strong in my religion, in my religious leanings, and I always carried the New Testament, that green New Testament little Bible they give you. So people call me the Reverend. That was my nickname in Army because I was always reading it. Yeah.
You're in an Oliver Stone picture.
Yeah, right, exactly. Except I'm not black, because the Reverend's usually black.
Yeah, yeah, that's, you did, you served our mm-hmm. country, thank mm-hmm. you, sir, and you. Did you, yeah, like, you go in for a certain reason, but there's overwhelmingly positive experiences in the military.
Absolutely.
But definitely at some sort of emotional cost, right?
Yeah,
sometimes,
sure.
I mean, my father and two uncles were in Vietnam,
oh,
and
wow.
so, you know, I hear those stories.
Yeah.
And how they, one of my uncles never quite came out the same. You know? I get it. So though your terms of your service was, you know, maybe a little different than their story.
It was.
You still.
Yeah.
You come out of that. How do you come out of that?
Well, you come out of that with a harder edge about the world.
Right. Because you had mentioned earlier transitioning back to like a creative environment and everything, and it's not unheard of, but it's difficult.
Yeah, you come out of it a little more suspicious of the world, a little more like protective of yourself because you kind of have to figure out how to work within the military. And I made two amazing friends when I was in the military, like and great friends all around, but like two really good friends. And so we kind of palled around for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, for the three of us together for a while until one of them got married and the other one ended up getting. So it just kind of worked itself out that we kind of moved away from each other after a while and it was done. But like I came out of it a harder edge, more questioning of things. I'd become kind of a semi-alcoholic when I was in there too.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Because you kind of drink a lot to deal with the shit of it all, you know. And so as you transition between, you know, you're going to – I tried to go back to college, which didn't really work out. And then I was doing the reserves. And so I ended up, like, having this thing where I was just like, I'm just going to stop for a while. And I just managed – I went and managed retail stores and doing reserves. And so it was, like, through my whole process, you know, through my whole process. But I was always, like, stuck in that military mindset.
Yeah.
But it also helps you survive things. Like – if you can survive basic training in AIT, you can survive most any other thing that you experience in your life, you know?
Including dating.
Including dating, yes. Yes, and the schmodown, for God's sakes. No, but people do that, and I think it's I think if you go into it, if you come out of it with a stronger sense of self, and there's a possibility of that when you go in the military, and then a stronger sense of that you can, whatever comes down the pike, you can handle it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so you emerge done with your time, and where you then decide again to go back to college.
Yeah.
And take me through that, which is why when I'd met you and Christian was like, "This is my college buddy."
Yeah.
Again, you're a good looking man, John. You don't
stop
look
it.
You don't look your age.
Thank you.
But I knew you were older, and I just was always like, that doesn't make – was John held back? What was the problem? Yeah. Was John miss a grade, repeat fifth? And I discovered you had a military career, kind of delayed your college career. So talk to me about going back.
What's that character in The Simpsons? Yeah, it was that guy.
Nelson.
Nelson, that's right.
Nelson Munt.
I came out of it because I had started going back to community college at night while I was managing stores and doing stuff in the reserves and you know, and I was slowly building my confidence back up to come back to college because I had been really scarred by my experiences in college and the first time around. I didn't like that college. I joined a fraternity. I had no business being in a fraternity. It was a very conservative fraternity. It did not work for me with my liberal leanings or my independent leanings, should we say.
Sure.
And so it was just a very bad experience at that college for a number of reasons. And so I had to kind of build my endurance back up to go back to school. And I started doing community college in Northern Virginia, and I got my AA degree. And then I applied to a bunch of colleges. And I was looking for an artistic college. I was like, I'm miserable in the military because by the end I was kind of miserable.
Sure.
I want to be miserable pursuing what I want to do with my life. And so I was like, I'm also pursue acting once and for all. You know, I was older. I was 26, 26. So I was older. And so for me, I was able to kind of like bear down and focus on it. And it was really great. And I loved my time in community college. I learned so much. And then when I applied to Florida State, that was one of the colleges because I wanted to go as far away from Virginia as I could. Montana State was another one that I applied to as well. So these were very strong programs for acting. I took a year off and lived in Charlottesville, Virginia, and worked at a television station while I got my head straight because I was like, do I want to really do this?
Yeah.
And if I want to make this change. And so I lived with my best friend for a while, who's now the city manager of Charlottesville, Virginia. And he said to me when I got my acceptance from Florida State, he goes, if you don't go, I'm going to kick you out of our apartment and we'll throw your shit out on the lawn and because you need to pursue this. This is your life.
Yeah.
And I went. That's how I went to Florida. I was 27 when I went to Florida State in 1997.
You're like, what's that quarterback that played a little bit later? Winky?
Yeah, Winky. I identified with him a lot because he was serving. He was in at the same time I was going to school. So it was great to have that kind of correlation. He was 28.
Yeah.
Same thing.
That's great. That's great. So you meet Mr. Harloff out
there.
Were you part of his Thursday night fight clubs at all?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Harloff and I always have, and this is really funny because we've always had this respect for each other.
Sure.
And, but you do your thing, I do my thing.
Okay.
And never, nary our paths would cross in that kind of situation.
Right, right.
But we would like go to like theater night parties or go to parties and hang out and talk. Because Christian was always like a regular guy. He was as close to. Yeah, he was a schmo. Right, exactly. He reminded me a lot of the military guys I knew and the better fraternity brothers that I knew when I was in that situation. And so for me, it was always fun to hang out with Christian and talk and hang out. And he wasn't one of these guys who was artsy fartsy all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, he helped. It was he helped in the transition. You know, I had people that I could talk to who weren't necessarily like all arty and stuff about
So
it was great.
And all due respect to artsy fartsy people.
No, you're of course.
Sometimes you're difficult to get along with. You know, there's well, that's what I like about our vein of our group, our little vein here in the mine in the gold shaft of art, because, you know, we're some dudes that like to go lift weights and watch a baseball game, and not that the artsy fartsy people don't.
No.
This conversation could go in a bad direction that I brought it up. But, yeah, I know what you mean, where I sometimes don't feel at home with I did theater in junior high and I drama and all that stuff. I was real, real good at it, blah, blah, blah. Didn't do it in high school because I didn't connect with those people.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't connect with them.
Yeah.
They didn't like Star Wars. They didn't, or, you know, they did, I'm sure. But, you know what I mean? Yeah, so I know what you mean where there's like, that's why I also gravitated to Christian as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is we could talk Transformers and G.I. Joe and the Yankees.
Yeah.
And just kind of be normal about it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, it was great. And it was so much fun. And but like I said, we were friends, but we weren't like hanging out all the time. We just knew each other out of respect. Yeah. He liked, he would watch, he was a big fan of my work as an actor.
Okay.
And that's kind of established us as friends. Like, Christian was always positive about the stuff I did. And he was positive about the way I treated him, because Christian would get a lot of shit at the theater from some of the artsy-fartsy guys, because he wasn't one of those guys that was, like, talking about Shakespeare all the time, or Arthur Miller, or all these kinds of things. Christian was a regular dude. And he enjoyed doing this stuff, but he wasn't, like, you know, one of these people. So he felt ostracized. And he's told me this. And I don't know if he talked about this on your episode, but he felt ostracized at times from some of those people. Mm-hmm. And so he liked that there was a guy like me who just fucking hung out with him and just talked shit and had a good time. And there was no judgment. You know?
Yeah.
Are you cool? Great. We're cool. Let's have beer and just shoot shit about stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Did you ever fight over the same women in college?
No. No. Christian was at a whole nother level and always has been. And God love him for that.
2006 Harlow Office is a legend.
He's a legend
forever. But he is doing wonderful for himself now.
Yes. Beautiful wife.
Beautiful wife and family. Great. So that shows that some people can, you know, settle down and change.
Exactly.
Between him and Macuga. The fact that two wonderful women have settled those two down is amazing and testament. What point, now you were Virginia born and bred or?
No, born in Philly.
Okay.
We were there for only maybe 6 months before we moved down to Virginia. Okay. So I was raised in Virginia, basically.
And what is your actual ethnic makeup?
Okay. My parents are Bolivian, from Bolivia, in South America, both of them.
Right.
My dad from Cochabamba, which is in Scarface. That's where Sosa, Sosa is at, and my mom's from La Paz, which is the capital of Bolivia.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. I've heard of that one.
Yes, great.
When did they move to that area? When did they come up? Philly?
Well, my mom, when she was 18, she came to the States.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom was a tough, a tough little bird, my mom. And my dad came when he was 20, no, he was in his 30s. I'm sorry, he was in his 30s. And so they met here in the States, and they got married on their fourth date. And that's how we did it back then. So.
Yeah.
And my mom was great because my mom met my dad when she was on a first date with my uncle. And so she slipped her number to my dad and said, call me.
Scandalous.
Yeah, my mom is a pioneer, man.
Scandalous. She's
people give me shit about this thing about supporting women sometimes in these conversations or whatever. And I'm like, I come from a strong mom
who
did her own shit. Didn't have to create a movement to do anything. She just did it. You know, and I love that about her. And so my sister's that way too, tough as nails. And so
older sister, younger sister?
Younger, yeah. I'm the oldest. So she's great. And she's in Virginia, two beautiful kids and doing her thing, but my mom was always about it. So, you know, she slid it because back then that's how you did it in the Latino community, right? Your first date was like you had to meet the whole family to see if they approved before you could actually go out on the date. So it was really interesting.
my ex-girlfriend was Salvadorian, or her mother was, her father was good old L.A. white, but
you get it. Though.
We dated for 4 years, but every time I go meet her extended family, grandma, grandpa, aunt, tios, the whole line, and they'd be like, "Who is this gringo sitting here? He ain't passing any test with us." But I was just there for the ceviche.
That's what you should be. That's what you should be. That's good
stuff.
So
you're right. I know what you mean. But four dates, that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a command decision.
It was. My dad was 10 years older than two. Okay. So they got married 35, 20. I was born like a year later. And then but we stayed in Virginia the whole time. Like, and my mom is still in the same house that we bought in 1979.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's still there in my hometown, and I go back and every Christmas and hang out with mom and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So you hit L.A. running.
I did.
2000.
Yeah.
October 2000, Yankees sweep the Braves in the World Series.
I remember that distinctly.
Yeah.
I watched that game.
I remember that. So you hit the town running. I'm always fascinated, and I ask this question a lot of Netflix Fuzz people. Obviously, we're all out here in L.A., and my journey was 2.5 hours south on the 101.
Really?
Yeah, from Pismo. Well, yours was farther, so it's another commitment. It's a Rocha command decision.
Yes.
You're out here, you hit the ground running. What do you do? What's the first thing you try to tackle?
Well, the first thing was to try to figure out like what I'm going to do for a job. You know, Yeah, exactly. I had come out to LA with like 10 grand because I had started a production company in Tallahassee. So I'd stayed after I graduated in 99. I stayed an extra year, about 9-10 months, and I directed 3 plays. And made money doing those plays down in Tallahassee. And I used that money to kind of as a nest egg to move out to L.A.
Okay.
And my dad and I did it. Like, we drove cross-country in a U-Haul.
It was
awesome. Like, that trip is one of the seminal moments of my life.
What do you take, the 20? Is that the 20 freeway, the 10?
Yeah, the 10. And 10? Then down, you're going through the tip of Texas, right around through Arizona. You don't go the long way, which is like going through the bottom of Texas, which is interminable. But you go through the tip, and then you hit Arizona. It was great. It was really great. And we broke down 3 or 4 times on the way. So it's just like there's all kinds of adventures in our experience. So when I got here, after I put my dad on a plane back to L.A., the focus was, okay, what do I do for a job? And so I started temping, and then I started, talking to people who had been here and like, what do I do for an agent? What do I do for this? Started doing headshots, doing all that jazz. And I didn't know the process of workshops and all that stuff until later. So I kind of think I was not prepared for L.A. in any way, shape, or form.
I understand that.
And it took me a while. It took me like 5 years to really kind of figure things out here in the city, you know.
I think that's right. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat for you. Yeah. I knew I wanted to go to the Groundlings, and I did that, but that's about all I did.
Right.
I didn't know, and this is not pre-internet, but internet not what it is now.
Right, the accessibility of it.
It was like, how do I get headshots? Where do I go to be an actor? Yeah, so I think I suffered because I wasn't fully prepared. But it took me, like you said, about 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay, I know how to function here now.
Right, right.
You're right.
And I joined a theater company, and I tried doing plays there, but I was really disillusioned by a couple of the theater companies that I was in, and I was like, yeah, this isn't. And I tried. Like I said, I'm a seeker, man. I'm always in the process of transition. So to me, I was like, okay, what does this mean? What is this all about? This doesn't work for me. It's not my jam. So let me like take a step back.
Right.
You know. And so it took I kind of fell into this hole of like doing jobs, and then I started working at a testing facility just around down the street from here, and I was doing that while I was trying to act, and I would occasionally book a voiceover thing or a commercial thing, and it was never like 100% committed until 2010, that's when I really like just walked away from regular jobs and started focusing on acting, and that was the removal of when I removed all the possible other options, all you can do is put your energy towards booking things, and things started to come. And so for me, that was a really nice situation. And I haven't had a regular job since. I book and work, and I do, I perform at Universal Studios.
Sure.
So I don't consider that a regular job. And
no, number one, I've seen you perform. You're damn good.
Thank you.
You walked out to my friend Jessica. We were trying so desperately to get in to get her wand. The line was too big. And it was surreal. I'm looking at you. I'm like, that's not John. Who is that? Some wizard.
Wizard.
You live that life, man.
Yeah, yeah. You can't break character.
What was the first thing that kind of hit that you're like, all right, this 2010 commitment is going to pay off?
Oh, I think, well,
not just in terms of money, but just like.
Well, I was able to get, my friend Andre ended up signing me as a manager, and then he got me agents, and those agents, I booked commercials. Like I booked a bunch of commercials that were nationals, Subway, and I even did a Minute Maid campaign that was a Boost campaign. You can still find those on YouTube, and you can hear me as a voiceover.
I'm sure Schmoville will.
Yeah, right. You hear me as a voiceover going, "Oops, someone forgot to boost," and so that was my thing, and so I would go like Minute Maid, blah blah blah. So that was the first time I experienced the idea of a campaign and how much money could come. come in. And so that was really great. And then doing, you know, a Toyota commercial, Mini Countryman, you know, all these kinds of things started kind of coming through. And it was great for like 5 years. It was really nice to kind of just be able to live off that money I was making and booking as an actor. Right. You know, I'd go hike, I'd go work out. It was my own schedule. And it was great for a long time. It was really fun.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I never got to experience that. I've gone from, you know, day job to, you know, Screen Junkies Collider, which is essentially a full-time day job.
Yeah.
I have to get to work at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
respectfully envy you there for that period of time and even still what you're accomplishing now.
Well,
have you always had this sexy voice, man?
To be honest with you, it's really interesting to say this.
It is.
Okay, thanks. But I was always pushed to go into radio and pushed to go into voiceover stuff, even in high school. Like, I did the school announcements.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Mike, one of the teachers who was one of the media people was like, John, you should do the school announcements. I'm like, how do you even do that? And he said, just go up and audition for it. And I was like, all right, so audition for it, and I got it. And
so
every morning I was there earlier than everyone else reading the school announcements.
Right.
So I did that for 2 years. And then I DJed at my first college that I was at. I DJed for a while, and then... everyone had always told me throughout my life, like, you have such a great voice, but I had never like really pursued much of it.
Sure.
And it wasn't until in mid 2000s here in LA that my friend Andre, he got me an audition for William Morris. Mm-hmm. I didn't even get a small agent. Like, he was like right at William Morris. Yeah. A friend of his was an assistant to an agent. They were looking for Latino voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so who spoke Spanish well. And so, they brought me in for an audition for the Scarface video game. Mm. I didn't book it, but they liked my audition so much that they backpocketed me, and then I booked my second or third audition, which was a Dr. Pepper campaign, and I booked that. And from there, I just, you know, they signed me, and then a year later, I was like, you know, I speak English really well, you know, and so without an accent, and so
well, that's funny because it's like. We've even dealt with it recently where someone here higher up was like, well, we need some diversity in that panel. And we were like, well, you have John Rocha. Yeah, no, we need some, we have enough white males. We're like, no, that's not a white male. And I don't mean as a slight deal. You just like, Bolivian is a lot different than what a general person might think.
Yeah.
And this gets into little issues, but that's funny to hear that even then they were like, oh, you don't have an accent.
Right, exactly. It took a year, man. Yeah, but
that's great.
I had to make my bones and then moved into the English stuff. Mostly what I book now is English stuff.
And famously that El Pollo Loco commercial.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's on camera. Yeah.
I remember seeing that live. You know, just like, oh, look at that. That's interesting. They're doing that. And then come to find it's you.
Yeah.
So throughout this ups and downs of your career, dating and everything, one thing, and you've mentioned it a couple times, and I want to have some fun, talk about dating and Shimoda and all that stuff kind of too, but you mentioned God prevalently, and I think you and I have that in common and type of thing where it's a little difficult, a little different in LA,
and you
get a lot of different viewpoints, and
sure.
I've definitely changed from what I believed at 10, not my core principles, but just... how I approach it or whatever and how it's executed. Has it always been a prevalent focus in your life?
Well, coming from a Latino family, my dad was very, very religious and he read the Bible every morning just for fun. Like my dad was like, just he would read for his own benefit, you know,
because
he felt that God had really saved his life on three different occasions. And so for him, it was three specific life-threatening situations God had come to him. And so my dad was very, very big about this. And so we had tried the church for a while, the Catholic church, but there was a lot of disillusionment with the Catholic Church. And
Catholic stuff.
Yeah, it's tough because the same people that are like, you know, shaking your hand in church are yelling at you for thinking that you cut them off in the church parking lot right after the service. You're just like, well, where's the consistency here?
You know?
And to me, consistency is a massive, massive thing in my life.
Okay.
And so it's a really, really big thing for me. And so we ended up walking away from the church when I was like 16, 17 years old. And then I've been on a journey ever since, you know? And so what I'm enjoying now is... no parameters. Like I don't, I go to Mosaic. I've just started discovering going to Mosaic, which is one of these worship places here in LA. And there's no like communion. There's no wine.
Right.
And there's no guilt. It's all about understanding the scriptures and what they mean, what they're trying to say, and understanding why they were written the way they were and addressed to the people, what was going for the people at that time.
Right, right.
And so it's a deeper dive, which is great for me, you know, because like, the surface stuff of religion is nice, but I need to understand the inner workings of it for me to find my place in it now.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was younger, I was like, I just got to do this because it says in the Bible, I got to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But this is like, well, why? And where does it come from? And what
and motivated.
And maybe, I don't want to say modern take, but a more modern application, which can open up gray Jedi-like areas.
Yes.
But I grew up in a Calvary Chapel church, very legalistic thing. If you looked at even a commercial for an R-rated movie, you might not be allowed to come back on Sunday.
Right.
And had my He-Man toys confiscated and studied by people in the church. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
It really did. And I was one of the only ones who did not go to a Christian school. I went to the public school.
Right.
So I never quite got along.
That's
so
fair.
But then I ended up in some big mega churches in LA.
Oh wow.
Shepherd of the Hills and all these kind of things, which
are
now even more giant.
Yeah.
And I felt disconnected from those too.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying, where it's like a little deeper dive or how it actually applies to.
Yeah, because Mosaic is just three songs worshiping God and Christ at the beginning of the service. Then there's a sermon, which is exploring some piece of scripture, and then there's one song and that's it. That's it. And then it's a very strong community, and I'm just like kind of dipping my toe in the water and kind of seeing what's here. You know, I'm a very cautious person in that way, because when I give my heart to something, I really give my heart to something. So I take a while to come around to it.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm enjoying rediscovering this again and walking this path again, and I'm enjoying it and how it's applying to my life.
And are you allowed to do it at your own pace?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no.
I've battled that before too, where I used to go to some of it and it's like immediately I'm grabbed and pulled aside and join this group, join that, go on this. And it's like, I just kind of want to slip in the back, hear some songs, hear some words, and say a prayer and leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no judgment. I love it.
Because I, grew up with a family. My mother was the secretary of the church. My dad was the sound engineer of the church. And friends with the pastor and all, it was all those kind of things. And then I was the head drama, the writer for the drama department at one of my, the bigger churches we went to. And it's fascinating. And I always say, too, it's the people that can sometimes cause a problem, but it's never God to me.
No.
I've always had that perspective.
Yeah.
Anytime I've walked away from a church or situation, I'm like, we humans aren't perfect.
Right.
So that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're in a good spot with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. And it's very powerful for me. And, and it's always been something that's danced around in my life. And I kind of walked away from it mentally for the last few years. So coming back to it, it's come back at the right time.
Right.
I feel like, yeah.
Well, especially as the world's about to end.
Yes, exactly. So true. God help us all.
Oh man! So, you have you got a lot going in that brain of yours, man. You got a lot of different. You're very deep. You're very insightful. Love having you on Force Center. Talk about ways of the Force.
Yeah.
You understand it. I can tease you for being passionate, but it's not just in your blood, but it's in your heart.
Yeah.
It seems like when you throw yourself into things, you want it. It means a lot to you. And no more than this schmodown.
Yeah, I mean, really?
Yeah,
that will show you who John Roca is from top to bottom.
Yeah,
and everything in between. Yeah.
Let's talk about the outlaw character.
Yeah,
which, like any good pro wrestling character, and you're a pro wrestling guy too, which
is why
I know this is working extra well for you. any good pro wrestling character, CM Punk, Rowdy Piper, even Hulk Hogan, those are very much of that person.
Yeah,
wrapped up in a nice public package.
Yeah.
So how did you come about crafting the outlaw?
The outlaw's interesting because like Christian reached out to me. I don't know how much key fob I can break here. So if these things get cut out per Christian's approval, you can cut it out. But like Christian came to me, and I knew about the Schmodown because you guys had had it on the Schmodown
show. Yeah, we had started. It was forming, yeah.
So he said to me, he's like, I think I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to turn it into a league.
Yeah.
And I said, and he goes, WWE style. I said, oh shit. And he goes, and I need a heel. Mm-hmm. And would you be willing to be my heel? Now, you're going to get a lot of shit. You know, people might not like you, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I need a heel to sell this thing. And I said, okay, I'm in. You know I'm in. I love heels.
Bad guy.
Yeah, Flair, Hollywood Hogan's one of my favorite versions of heels. And so he said, if you can do this, it's great. And he said, I want something like I don't know. It's like something. So I don't know how. Either he came up with it or I came up with it. It was a conversation. We talked about names and blah, blah, blah. And something outlaw, then the outlaw. Mm-hmm. And then in my mind, I was like, oh, perfect, because I've got a cowboy hat. And then the V for Vendetta mask just came, but just random. Because I was going through props in my closet. And I was like, because I had been him for Halloween after the movie had been released. And I love that comic book.
Yeah.
That graphic novel, rather. And so I just combined the two, and then step by step, it kind of became its thing. And Christian and I would have conversations about what I would talk about in the promos. And so, like everything else, and like Vince, it's like sketch out the broader general of what you're trying to get to, generalize, mm-hmm. and then I color in the spots. And so those promos, yes, they're not scripted, but they are, and to a degree, I have to hit certain points. And most people who are doing the promos. But I just took to it like a duck to water. And step by step, it grew and grew in terms of mm-hmm. the personality and the situations, people who would win, do you know what I'm saying, and stuff of that nature. And I think the Scott Mantz rivalry was the one that finally put the Outlaw on the map.
Connected it.
And that's why I love Scotty to death. Scotty knew exactly how to play this from his angle that helped me stand out and I knew how to play that to help him stand out.
Yeah, you know? Come on, man. It's like a good wrestling dance
partner. It's a program,
man.
Right?
That's it's a program. And it's good. And you absolutely have taken to it. And it means so much to you. And look, there's there's a perspective of this is just movie trivia on a YouTube channel. But I mean, I can tell from your eyes, I can tell from your heart, I can tell from your reactions. is it just because you're a competitive person? You want this win? What is it?
Yeah, I'm a competitive person by nature. I mean, when I played basketball, I was the guy talking shit while we played, you know, and I learned how to do that playing ball on the streets with other people. And so to me, whenever I invest in a competitive situation, all my juices get flowing and all my buttons get pushed, and that's how I play. And I want it, you know. And when that's the thing, and I got no shame in wanting something, you know. And other people, and the thing that's coming out, which I really love, is how everyone was making fun of me for being so passionate about it. They're all understanding it now as they get closer to tasting the gold. Their own passion gets involved, their own neurosis steps in, their own concerns and worries about looking bad in front of hundreds of thousands of people on YouTube.
Views are up, man.
Our views are crazy for this thing. And so it's like, okay, now you understand what I'm talking about. To make something work, to make something good, you cannot half-ass the passion.
Sure.
People have to invest. People want to invest. They see the Outlaw. They see John Rocha. They see a guy who is committed to this character. And it is an extension of me. It is the worst extension of me that you can create.
Sure, but it's an extension.
But it's an extension, yes, absolutely. All great characters are an extension of the person creating them in wrestling. And so, therefore, the Shmurdan is the same way, you know? And so, like, Riley is Riley. And Riley can only go so far as Riley the hero, right? He's going to be Riley. And Clark Wolf, the same thing. Makuga as well. You know, you when you get in there, Rachel Cushing is discovering that too. So it's like, and Miss Movies, this heel persona of Miss Movies, that's in Brienne. She may not want to accept it, but that is within Brienne.
Watching Miss Movies, and she's going to be back on the Knapsack File soon, but watching Miss Movies transition in front of our eyes on movie Schmodown here, movie trivia Schmodown, it's been one of the joys of the show. Of a quiet, maybe unsure person. Who's finding not just a performing side, which she's always had. That she was in theater. She was a cheerleader. What is it? The spirit squad.
The
song girls. That's what it was.
Is that what song
girls? She was USC song girl.
Yeah, fight on.
But to watch her now, it's fascinating to watch all of this. And even Rachel Cushing's another one, too. A quiet editor in a dark room is now a hero to a lot of people.
Exactly. Walking out as Galadriel.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great stuff.
It's great.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
This is the truth.
Lay it down, Alex.
What's that thing about the elevates all boats? What's that saying?
I don't know.
Rising tide elevates all boats. I am the rising tide of the Schmodown. The Outlaw is the rising. Without the Outlaw, there isn't the entrances. There isn't the personas. There isn't. I took this thing to another level because this thing needed to go to another level with Christian. Yes, with Christian. Absolutely.
Sure.
Christian,
baby.
I think I am the Hulk Hogan to his Vince McMahon for this leak, and I will forever, ever say that. And no one can take that away from me. That's the truth. People step up their game. Dan Merle was a good champion. But until I pushed his buttons, we didn't see this other side of Dan.
Yeah.
Same thing with Riley was a consistent winner, had the belt. He thought he was going to walk back in.
It was a fun hobby.
He was a fun, and then I beat him twice. Like, those things are real. And then Riley was super pissed, and he came at me, and he did the whole Karate Kid thing. And, like, that's the thing. You elevate the game, and, you know, people step up, and they've all stepped up in some
amazing ways. When they write the history books of the movie Trivia Schmodown, when this, and I believe in my heart that this will hit TV.
Oh, yeah, and it should.
I believe in my heart. Yeah. It will hit TV, and this will go, and this will catch on. I've never seen Christian Harloff fail in anything. I've seen circumstances change. I've seen his direction change. But when he puts his mind to something,
right.
and it succeeds. And it would seem as you, too. Yeah, I think when the history books are written, they're going to look back at that V for Vendetta mask and that cowboy hat. And people wanting you to lose.
Yes.
Just as much people wanting you to win.
Yes.
Look, you and I know. People didn't turn out to WrestleMania 1 to see Hulk Hogan win. They turned out to see Roddy Piper lose.
Exactly.
And there's certain part of that there. And you were absolutely embracing it. It's so much fun. I saw it happen. on movie fights firsthand.
Yeah, right, right.
I definitely had known you, definitely yeah. worked with you, definitely mm-hmm. knew you were a passionate guy and competitive and everything, but then to watch you and Mance lose the plot for a little bit, to really get so lost into it, and I know Mance is a passionate
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
But to watch you do it as well, yeah. that's what I think it was like, this is another level with
yeah.
this guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, you did suffer a defeat recently. How are you doing with that?
Yeah, it sucks to lose the belt. I'd worked so hard to get it and to beat Dan. It was mm-hmm. no one can take that away from me. No one can take away the journey of getting right. to the, and I was the first one to beat Dan. They can't take that away from me either.
Right.
And so it sucked to lose to Riley, but I fought him tooth and nail to the end, and, right. and he did too. He stepped up his game to his credit. He came prepared and ready, and everything worked against him, and he still pulled out the win. And so right. you got to respect that as a competitor, and there's nothing more I could have done other than maybe casually peruse the cast list of all the Marvel films before I walked through the door to have won the fight. But there yeah. are times where you walk into an arena and you know it's going to be a dogfight. I had that feeling with Ellis.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's not a shock that I lost to Riley. I was feeling the same way. There was a different energy in the room, and yeah. so I was like, this is going to be a tougher battle. I had a strange, stupid confidence feeding when I faced Dan.
Sure.
I can't explain it. I just felt like I had nothing to lose, absolutely nothing to lose.
I know what you mean. I'll say it here for the first time. When Sam Witwer got eliminated at the Star Wars Showdown,
yeah,
in my head, I looked at the crowd, and in my head, I said, I got this.
Yeah. Oh, did you really?
I said, I got
See? This. You do you guys who are at yeah. home, you don't fucking know what it's like. It's when you're in this arena, anything can happen. It isn't yep. sitting home behind a computer going, no, it's this. It's when you're in the arena surrounded by thousands of people or yeah. hundreds of people or even 20 people and the lights are on and the other competitors are there and everything is happening, the technical situation, shooting yep. the show. There's a lot involved.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you don't sit there that's all in a freaking vacuum because it isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so and those moments happen for you.
Yeah.
You have to know. And I knew in the fourth round I was going to beat Dan.
Yeah.
I knew in the fourth round, in the speed round, I was like, I got this motherfucker.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Look at that. It takes over the fire. Roka takes over here. No, I love it. Great. It's as we wrap up this part of the show here, and there's so many things to talk about. You are a very, like I said, multifaceted guy
Thank
here.
You.
But I want to look to the future here
yeah.
with you. You got your career, and you're like me too, where we're working in a sphere. Now you have more acting and voiceover and stuff
sure.
that I don't do, but we're working in this sphere that didn't exist 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So even though we're older dogs in it, we're all still new.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you focus on now? Where do you go from here? And that includes finding love.
Yeah. Well, 2017 has been an interesting year. You know, it started out kind of 2016 ended really badly for me emotionally. And so climbing back out of that thing, which I think will be on the documentary, maybe not, we'll see. Mm. But 2017, I made a resolution with myself. And I don't mean a New Year's resolution. I mean a life resolution.
Sure.
I was like, we're going to focus on getting a job in this industry that is consistent, a full-time job with benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to focus on improving as a host. We're going to focus on getting gigs as a host. We're going to focus on getting more work as a voiceover artist. And we're going to focus on personal development. And so these have been the things that have been
That's
my real
a lot,
drive.
John.
Well, that's my life. I carry a lot on my shoulders on purpose. I'd like to challenge myself
yeah.
every day. I don't like to have a boring day. And so it's like these kinds of things are what drive me. And sometimes the pit is real, real deep, man, and it fucking sucks. Climbing out can be really, really hard on a daily basis, but this is part of it, you know, and
right.
I love it to death. So my goal is to be on a network. I would love to be on Collider full time, or if it's Screen Junkies or UpRocks or whatever is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be on a network full time doing what I love to do, which is talk about film, analyze film, go to junkets, go to screenings, talk about stuff. I'm starting a YouTube channel soon. We're starting the Outlaw Nation podcast soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these things, or it may be up by now by the time this episode comes out. But
yeah.
So there's a lot happening that I want to put forward and love. Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, I'm in this place. Like when I made that commitment to win the title a year ago, what did I say? I said, I'm going to win that title. And I did it.
Yeah.
Most everything I set my mind to, I do. I appeared in movies. I've appeared in TV shows. I've done voiceovers for animated series, which I still do.
Mm-hmm.
I do campaigns, everything I've set my mind to, I do. So my mind is set to finding a wife now. My mind is set
okay.
to finding
and the have, W. Word,
yeah.
Huh?
The W. Oh yeah, absolutely. Having kids, whatever. I'm ready.
Sure.
Like when I was in my mid-30s, I wasn't ready. 20s,
sure.
not ready. I'm now in a place where I'm very ready to give my heart and start the process of building a foundation, having a strong relationship, because I think that's the last piece of the puzzle for me
sure.
in professional world as well. Yeah. Having that as a strength and a foundation to create what I need to create. That's the kind of person I'm built. Other people can do it solo for the rest of their lives. I'm not built that
way. But I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Though I joke about being alone a lot. I had two long-term girlfriends for a time.
Right.
And there's part of, and I can phrase it right, but there's part of your brain that's like, all right, I got that taken care of. Like, it's there. And now I can go conquer the rest of the world, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, it didn't work out for whatever reasons for me. But so I know what you mean. It's a fair thing to have that partner, which sometimes is a romantic way of looking at it, but it's a truth.
Yeah. There's a power in having that because you are also facilitating her. Like, you're also helping her and supporting her and giving her strength.
Vice versa.
She's returning that back to you. And you got to find that person. And I thought I had found that person a few years ago, and I thought I'd found that person recently, but there were cracks in the armor. And those cracks in the armor, where I want to go, there can't be too many cracks in the armor because I can't feel confident in your support and care for me. And that's important for me.
You know,
like I said, when I give my heart to something, I give it fully. And once I give it fully, I expect to have the same level of commitment back. And if you're not really to give me that similar, then you got to get out. You got to get out of the way because I got to find somebody who does.
And nowadays you don't want to waste time with that.
You really don't. It's No time. Just
so
like Apollo said, no time.
No time. There is a lot left for you to accomplish. You've already accomplished a lot, and that includes, just some amazing personal growth and change, and being open about it. I think it's one of the important things that you could do in this world is helping others. You never know.
Yeah.
You never know. And I get that opportunity sometimes to hear people in person shake my hand and say thanks for some stuff discussed. And that's not just what I discuss; it's what my guests discuss, and that's great. So I appreciate you being open and honest.
Totally.
And you are a wonderful character in and out of the ring.
Thank you, Ken.
And
you too.
I just like hot dogs, but and I don't. Yeah, the Outlaw Schmodown.
Yeah.
You're right. There's something powerful about you, and I don't want you ever to change.
Thank you,
the Outlaw.
Can we clear something up?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to clear this up?
Go for it.
We never got into a fist fight. I want that cleared up now. Ken and I never ever got into a fist fight. There was never a battle. You guys need to understand. Yep. We're having fun with this shit.
Yeah.
There was never a fist fight.
And I'll say, what's funny is I said that on Schmo, is that there was a behind-the-scenes incident on the Schmodown, the episode where you and Christian took on,
me and Nost took on Christian.
And Christian and Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
confused. You and Christian recently teamed up against a screen junkie.
That's right.
Yes, there was an off-air incident involving a question where the room got really tense, loud, some screaming, some shouting, and I made a passing reference on Schmo's. No, tongue-in-cheek, but also just acknowledging there was a real incident, and I said there was nearly a fist fight. But people thought it was John and I because John on air had been teasing me and I was teasing you back. We're hacking on each other.
Yeah, we were.
Totally out of complete
friendship,
but also just, you know, mock show, part of the show.
Exactly.
And people started running with it, assuming immediately that John and I met in the parking lot, which I would have lost, out here by the dumpster at Collider. And no, that didn't happen. No, that wasn't even remotely close to what I was referring to. There's some other things that almost happened.
That was not it. I just walk through the door and compete. That's all I do. I do not pick fights or try to get into any situation with anybody because this is a very difficult thing to pull off. And the last thing you need is extra stress on the people who are trying to pull it off.
Yes.
And I've been behind the mic calling a match, so I know it takes a lot of concentration, a lot of moving parts. So there was no fist fight.
No, there was no. So you can put that all to rest out there, please. Though I'm sure John and I will still have fun on air together. I'd be bummed if we didn't.
I'd be remiss if we didn't.
If we didn't. John, you have a lot of things going on, so I want you to take a second here to tell everyone where they can find your work, including your podcast Cinephiles and all that wonderful stuff.
Yeah, you guys can always find me at The Rocha Says, R-O-C-H-A, on Twitter and on Instagram. Please follow me. I love communicating with you guys, good or bad. I love communicating with you guys, and I've got a lot of great email messages from people ever since I lost, and also before, from the film therapy podcast I did with Brianne. There's been a lot of people who've reached out to thank me for being so openly honest about my depression, and that was great. And so you can find me there on Twitter and Instagram. You can listen to the Cine-Files on iTunes. My film professor friend Steve Morris and I break down one classic film that came out before the year 2007, and we talk about it for an hour to an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. We've had great guests on. We've had Sasha Pearl Raver, Scott Mance. We've had a couple of cast members from Bones on. We're working with Joe Mantegna to possibly bring him on to talk about either The Adventures of Robin Hood or Godfather. So we'll see. And of course, We've gone out to other people. Ken, I'm sure you'll come on and talk about one of those films. And so it's a great podcast, and you can find it there. Cine-Files on Stitcher and on iTunes. And also we have a YouTube channel, Cine-Files. You can go there and the Facebook page. Fridays on Collider Movie Talk. And the Outlaw Nation podcast, if it's not already up by now, it will be up on Schmoes No Plus. Is that what it is, a podcast channel?
I think so, yeah. They change so much.
There you go. That's right. And if you voiceover stuff, you can always hear me on Transformers Robots in Disguise as the character of Springload, and on Sophia the Princess, whatever that's called, Sophia?
Sure.
Sure. It's on Disney Channel. I play the dance teacher. So Sergio Adagio. What a great name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you can see me on all those things. I don't know. Is there anything else?
I don't know. You do a lot, but those are the main things. Yeah, and the important thing is to follow John on Twitter. You get the updates. Yeah, what else you got?
Oh, yeah. You can always come see me at the Harry Potter Land and the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Universal Studios here in Los Angeles. Maybe you'll catch me in the room and I'll pair you with a wand. You never know.
I highly recommend, if you're local or you're traveling, do that. John is really, really good at that. It'd be easy to overlook that as part of your repertoire, but that is something you're really good at.
Yeah, so. I recently paired Grace and her sister, so that was
fun. That's right. Yeah. The wonderful Grace Hancock here from Collider.
And Aaron and his sons.
Oh, really?
So that was great, yeah.
Oh, great. Great. Guys, that is it for now. As always, you can follow the Knapsack Files on Facebook. We have a page there. You can like my official Facebook page. Follow me on Twitter at Ken Knapsack. We are on iTunes, which is now called Apple Podcasts or whatever it is. Just go to where you know it is. Subscribe, rate, and review. The Patreon page is up there, patreon.com/TheKnapsackFiles, if you want to support a lot of things coming in 2017 for the channel and the feed. And that is it. We'll see you next time for The Outlaw. This has been Ken, and this has been The Knapsack Files.